I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
Uh-oh, guess what day it is? Guess what day it is? Huh? Anybody?
Mike Shope.
Mike. What day is it, Mike?
And the Bulldog.
Hey, guess what day it is? Oh, come on. I know you can hear me.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
Guess what today is?
It's hump day.
Woo-hoo!
On WGR.
Hump day!
Sports Radio 550.
Hi, everybody. Beautiful day outside. Mike Shope and the Bulldog here with Sneaky Joe. We'll be talking a lot about Rene Robert. You just heard Gilbert Perreault. He is one of several great Sabres from the past who knew Rene and played with him, and of course, in Gilbert's case, famously, and have been on the station today to talk about his life and his career. We're here for those of you who want to do the same at 803-0550, either from watching Robert or even knowing him or both. And Bulldog, I knew him only a little bit, and really, you were there some of those times. It wasn't, I didn't know him well enough to be like call him a friend or anything. But we had some interesting interactions, and of course, as a player, I mean, what more needs to be said than his number is retired?
Right, the number's retired, and he's part of a trio of statues, the famous line out in the plaza at the building. And he's a very strong figure in the history of the franchise. And you know, I've been thinking about him since the news came out a few days ago about that he had a heart attack, and it maybe didn't look good. And then of course, with learning of his death last night, he was at everything, like any event, and I don't know. I haven't heard. I read a lot. I haven't had an opportunity to hear a lot of what everyone has said. But I'll bet Rob Ray would tell you that Rene was someone who he could call for whatever it would be, and he would be there. Like if he were in town and there was an alumni function, and it was for whatever cause. I just feel like every event that I ever went to. Whether it was a golf tournament or a dinner of some kind, right, or just anything like that, he was always there. A lot other guys who maybe had higher standing within the club ultimately and maybe outshined Rene as a star or something were maybe more hit or miss, but I feel like Rene was always there, and I'm blown away to learn. I didn't know him either, much better than you. In fact, when I think of him and interactions that I or we would have had with him, your story from the locker room in that year of the lockout where we quote unquote coached the alumni against a team of NHL stars and celebrities is one of the more prominent stories that I think of, and it's your story.
You were there too. It's both of us.
I was there, but like you tell it and you have it. I feel like it's your story. I defer to you on that story. I like how you tell it. So I'm sure we'll get to it. But like I had you know, because he was at so many things, I neither would call him like a friend. I feel like I've known, like I knew Rick Martin, the late Rick Martin, I'd say better than I knew maybe any of the alumni, maybe Danny is close because, you know, I had the opportunity to spend a whole evening and really an afternoon and an evening with Rico one time after playing golf and then after golf. And that was a real highlight for me. But Renee, like I would have these sort of, like we never played golf together, but we were at numerous events and we'd pass one another, and he just always needed to tell me what he thought. And you know, you're hearing a lot, I think, right, from people today that he could be blunt or gruff. And I would share that observation because he just needed to tell you what he thought about Darcy or about, you know, whatever it was. Like, he just, there was no BS, no, well, you know, we'll wait and see. Like, he had an opinion and he was just going to tell you. And, you know, it might not have always been popular with the team because a lot of alumni tend to just support the team no matter what. And I think Renee just couldn't really fly that way. You know, he just needed to tell you if he disagreed with a choice they made on a coach or a signing of a player or whatever. And I grew to admire that over the years. You know, it sort of took me aback maybe the first, I don't know, half a dozen times that something like that happened. And then I really grew to appreciate how candid he was.
Yes, I mean, that is a quality that I certainly admire and respect in people. You know, they tell you the truth. The locker room story is good. The what's the thing about his driveway?
I saw some reference to that yesterday evening, and I didn't. I was doing a lot of stuff, different stuff last night. I just didn't have time to follow through. So today I just sort of went looking, and it's on his Wikipedia page. He had like pieces of the odd brought to where his home was, and had like his driveway is made from pieces of the destruction of the odd. Like pieces of the odd are his driveway.
Wow.
And I never knew that. I had never heard that from anyone all these years. And I just feel like that is such a sign of how much it all meant to him to represent the Sabres and the building they played in. I mean, that's just a really meaningful gesture to me that he took that on to have his driveway made of pieces of the building he most famously played in. I mean, that is just really, I was stunned to learn that actually.
When I think about him, I think about his face. His expression is, you don't know what he's thinking, Robert. Like, in my few interactions with him, I know there was one time in Toronto, I was there on like a fans trip to see the Sabres play the Leafs, and all the French Connection were there. And I didn't know him at all. And I just remember, I don't remember details, but I remember like sort of, you know, approaching him, talking to him, and not having any idea if he was receptive to it. Like just, you know, hi. Just kind of like,
right,
what is this person thinking? Is he messing with me? Does he want me to get away from him? Like, what is he thinking? And I like that trait too. I like a guy who keeps you guessing. So when this kind of manifested another time later, I would say by this time, at least we were acquainted with each other. And what was it? It was maybe 06? What was the year where we went out and asked former players to come on one at a time to talk about their memories of playing for the Sabres in the playoffs? Was it the canceled season or was it the year after that? What, one of those years we did that. And most of the guys you could think of who were prominent in Sabres history came on, you know, and did a segment with us. And one was Robert. I remember Stu Barnes. I don't think it was the canceled season, unless he was playing in the minors or coaching even, because in his case, he wanted me to call him. I would text guys, and he wanted me to call him. And when I reached Barnes, he was on a bus. He was on a team bus. Mm. So I don't know if it was – what year it was. That confuses me about it, about my memory of it. Robert, he wanted to be sure. Like most guys were, yeah, of course, what time, you know? Curtis Brown, what time? When's good? What day is good? You know, you just sort of set it up. Mm-hmm. Robert was like, don't mess with me. What are we doing here? You know, he was more like that. Just sort of, you got to be right, straight with me, Mike. I remember him texting me that, like, wow, This is cool, actually. You got to be straight with me, Mike. What are we doing here? I don't want any, like, okay. I mean, you don't know me that well, but you can trust me, and all we want to do is ask you questions about the 70s. That's really...
We're not going to put you in the ditch. Don't worry.
Right. We won't ask you management questions, you know, whatever. We just want to sort of have Renny Robert on. He's like, okay. And so he did that. The locker room story. In my memory, you are right next to me for this.
Yeah, no, I know. Yeah, you've just... it's just one of these things that over time, I mean, it was, what, 16 years ago now? I just feel like it has become your story, even though I witnessed it. And so I feel like I might screw up a detail. Like, it'd be one of those stories where, you know, like husband and wife want to tell a story about something that happened on vacation, and you know you've got the story locked down, but your wife wants to start telling it, and you just sit there and go like, okay, I'm just going to let her go. No, that's not right.
That's
no,
not
see,
what
look,
happened.
The taxi driver, right? And I think if I ever start telling that story, you're going to feel like that. So I just defer to
well,
you.
Well, you know, it's been a long time, even since I've thought of it. So I don't know if I have it. It's probably going to change a little from the last time I told it. But so Bulldog and I are coaching a Sabres alumni team. Some of you listening may have been there. So this is 2005. There's no hockey season. And all your favorite former Sabres, or most of them, including all three French Connection players, played against, who do you remember most? Rick Middleton, Glenn
Rick
Anderson.
Middleton was there. Yep.
Dennis Leary was on the other team. Michael J. Fox was on the other team.
Right.
You know, lots of other players. Cashman, guys who played for other teams. It was a big lineup. I remember being in the other locker room, too, meeting Michael J. Fox and Dennis Leary. Like, that was pretty cool. The thing I remember most about the day, though, was we're in the Sabre locker room, and you know, I think you can appreciate this, people who know us. So you got everybody in there. And these guys, a lot of these guys had not seen each other in many years. Like, this is sort of the ultimate alumni event. The other ones are good. The wine festival's good. Those basketball games that maybe they used to have are fine. You get six or eight guys. Mm-hmm. This is like everybody.
Yeah, they are in, it's not their
dressing.
Locker room, but they are, they are in their element. Like,
right.
This is, like, where, you know, they knew one another the best, I would think, like that and the road and whatever. But I remember feeling like, what in the hell are we even doing in
right.
here? Like, I think at one point, I don't know if I remember this correctly, if I'm just trying to flatter my humility, but I feel like someone, maybe even you, had to like coax me to come into the room because I was standing in the hallway like, I don't know. I mean, I don't know what to do. Gilbert Perreault is in there shirtless with suspenders on. I don't know what I'm doing.
I absolutely did that. You were sort of like over toward the shower, sort of hiding almost. Like, get in here.
Yeah.
If I'm going to stand in here, you're going to stand in here. This is our
right,
team.
Right.
So,
yeah.
But I wanted to say, like, if you know me or us, you can appreciate it. I think my back is so tight up against the wall. Like, I'm in there. But I really don't feel like I belong in there. So I am just, I'm trying to be wallpaper, you know, just sort of standing up there. And the point about how they were dressing for a game is key, because I think that sort of sets the mood. Because guys were just really happy. You know, you have all these great former players putting on a Sabre uniform, white. Were they even wearing this uniform at the time? Like, they were not.
No.
The Sabres put on white, the blue and gold crest, the original uniform, and at that time, the Sabres played in black. So that was even kind of cool, at least to me. So we're in there, and you're on my left eventually, and I think Rip Simonic was probably there, because when is he ever not there when it's about a Sabre thing? When is he ever not there? And Joe Crozier is to my right, and I remember wanting to say hi to him, because when I lived in Rochester and my family knew the Knox family a little bit, I would get tickets to Amherst games through Mrs. Knox, and Joe Crozier was involved. And one or two times I sat with him there. Like, I think he might have been in charge of the Amherst at that time. Like, he might have run the team. So I don't know if he remembered me, but I just wanted to sort of approach him. He was at least somebody I'd met and was not dressing to play hockey. So he is standing to my right, and we're just small talk a little bit. And here comes Robert toward us. And he's got that expression, like, you just, okay, is he upset? Is this
right.
is this going to be a joke? Like, what is actually happening? This, to me, like that, as somebody who didn't know him well, but I think others who knew him well are sort of talking about this, that was his sort of defining trait, that like, okay, this could be anything. He's coming at us. Yeah, this could be anything.
He always kept you guessing.
Yeah, this could be anything. So he is walking, big, loud locker room, all these players. Me up against the back wall, you to my left, Joe Crozier to my right. And here comes Robert toward us, and his eyes are glued on Crozier. And, you know, again, these guys are all just having a great time. Robert goes up to Crozier and is like, I cannot believe you did not put me in Montreal in game so-and-so after. And then Crozier, and just like, I still don't know if they're acting. Crozier, in the same kind of manner of speaking, is like, you were out the night before. I couldn't do it. I told you why. I've told you this for 50 years or whatever it is. I've told you this. And like, the two of them are kind of sparring. And I loved how I couldn't tell if it was playful or not. Like, there was some amount of seriousness to it. But, you know, like, you have those conversations where you're like, deep down, you really mean it, but you're still going to laugh it off.
Mm-hmm.
And like, so the Robert just approached him. I mean, maybe he had seen him 1,000 times between those moments. But on this day, he is upset, I think, about how Crozier benched him for something. Crozier was the coach of the team in 73.
Right, yeah. You don't really know if he's doing it even just for our benefit.
Right.
Right, just to put on a, you know, just like, you know, this. I got this thing with the coach, and I'm still carrying it around. And, like, you don't know if that is, like, really? Or no? Or you just, you know, it was really awesome.
So
it was really awesome.
You know, I'm just standing there all stiff. My eyes are shifting back and forth. Like, should I be looking at this? Should I walk away? Is this private?
Right.
Why am I standing? What is any of this? Why am I standing here?
What am I doing here?
What am I doing here? Pat LaFontaine was on that team of ours.
Yep. About to tweet. You sent me a picture. The picture of the two of us surrounded, and LaFontaine is closest to you. Fred Stanfield is there. Lindy, Rick Martin is between our heads. I don't see Renee there. I see Daryl Shannon. I see my friend Phil, who ran the beverage place we did a bunch of shows at, who was a goalie that probably was playing in some capacity there. I could see his face there now. I recognize him. I'm going to send that out, but Renee is not there. But it looks like we're having like a pregame huddle or something, which is absurd.
Yeah. Well, that's where LaFontaine is looking at me.
Right.
And I don't know what I just said. Maybe something completely terrible. I don't know what I just said to him, but he's making a face.
Yeah.
Well, it's a great loss for the Sabres, as many have said. It's a chance, you know, it's a chance to relive or reminisce about those teams, and that's really what I need you for, because probably the first time I saw Robert, he was on the Leafs.
Yeah.
His career as a Sabre is a little bit before my time, so he was on the Rockies. 1980 is the first year I would be able to tell you that, like, I really followed the team. I would have been 8, and he was not on the team. So, you know, I mean, of course, we know about the French Connection and the Fog game goal and the goal in 73 and the Forum. Rick Jeanneret's call is famous from that. You know, great times.
Great times. I mean, that's the first overtime goal in the history of the franchise. Rene scores in 73. I mean, that's game 5 in Montreal. They get to come back home to Buffalo to play game 6, and that's where thank you Sabres and all that. Like, I barely remember. I mean, I remember watching parts of that series, but, you know, it's April of 1973, and I'm still 7 years old. But I remember things about that series. I want to think that I can see Rene's goal in overtime, but I can't. I'd be lying if I told you that. Like, I've heard the highlights so many times. I still do have a 45 with the Donna McDaniel, "We're Gonna Win That Cup" song, and the B side of that is a bunch of highlights, and the thank you Sabres and Rene's goal that led to that are on that. So it's one of those things that I've heard so many times subsequent to it having happened that I don't, it's all tangled up. But 75 for sure, the Fog game. I mean, that's it's the finals, it's the Flyers. I mean, he scored some. Just those are very important goals in the history of the franchise. And, you know, of course, his place on the wing there, like he, He was not, you know, here when Gilbert got here. He was not here when Rick Martin got here. And he was the, you know, he was the genius of punch in lock move to put get him and put him on that line. And just one of the greatest lines in the history of the sport. And it, you know, just would not have been the same without him. So, yeah, I mean, he's just a super important guy. And I'm loving, you know, seeing so many people that are talking about how he was their favorite. You know, because that's not, like I said, like he, I think in the hierarchy of, you know, Sabres history, Rene is not the highest ranking guy. But of course, there are fans out there that have him as their favorite. They wore 14 when they were kids playing. They had the same hand shot or they played the same position or whatever it is. And so you gravitate to those guys. Like I don't think I really evaluated Jerry Korab as my favorite Sabre based on how he played necessarily. He wore number 4, and when I started playing hockey, I wore number 4, so Jerry Korab became my favorite Sabre. That's how it works when you're 6 years old, you know? And so for a lot of people in this area that played hockey as kids, like Rene resonates in that way for them, and I just love hearing that today.
Let's get connected with our fans, brought to you by Bond, Schenick & King, a full-service Buffalo law firm. You want to talk about Rene Robert's career and his life. He was, again, a prominent figure all over Western New York for many years. On the island with the Miracle League field, he was often a part of those events. And I was always excited that he lived on Grand Island where I grew up and still live. So maybe you just came to know him later, as a lot of Western New Yorkers did. 803-0550 is how to reach us. Here is Tony with us. Hi, Tony.
Hey, guys. I never got to meet Rene Robert, but I'm a few years older than Bulldog, so I have great memories from those teams. And you know, when you guys were talking about wearing the jerseys, I know my friends, you know, we had a street hockey team, and I was number 11, and my right-handed shooting friend was number 14, and my left-handed shooting friend was number 7, and we had the jerseys, and it was great. And just, you know, for me personally, I've never been able to rekindle my fandom, so to speak, for the Sabres. And I blame it on that French Connection team. They were just so entertaining, and so the passion. You know, you mentioned Bulldog, you know, we're going to win that cup. You know, I mean, it's just something that was great. And Robert was, you know, he was intricate to that team. He did, like you guys said, he wasn't the top dog. Martin had the shot. Perreault had everything else. But Robert played the point on the power play. He was a quarterback. He, you know, and to hear, I got to hear Gilbert earlier today talking to the guys, and it was great, you know. And so I just wanted to chime in and you know, let you guys know that an old guy remembers Rene Robert and remembers a French Connection. And you know, it was great times. Those goals that you mentioned, you know, I had them on tape. Dan Roberts used to play him in the morning afterwards, you know, the goal in Montreal and then the goal against Bernie Parent in the fog. I mean, just if you guys could play that again sometime, that would be awesome.
Yeah, we will do. Thank you, Tony. We will do some of that today. I was also a kid who taped the morning radio shows for the highlights later, but I did the same thing and probably still have that stuff. You still play that 45? Like, are you able to play it? Probably, right?
I could play it. Yeah, yeah. I
mean,
I could. I don't know if I don't think my microphone cord will. I mean, I could crank it up. You'd hear it, but I don't think the audio quality would be great. But yes, I can play it. I have it.
We will also be sharing some of Perreault's comments and Danny Gare also this morning. Throughout the day, I mean. I did text Danny to see if he wanted to join us, but I feel bad. You know, those guys have kind of all been on, or a lot of them have been on. And it's got to be weird. You know, like in real life, a close friend dies, and I think other people give you space. In sports, like, we sort of call you. We want you to, you know, talk about it and maybe try to tell you, maybe you'd enjoy it. I don't know. I feel always sort of awkward doing that. Danny has been on. He's just been a friend of ours for a long time, so we'll see. But definitely, we'll talk. There'll be a lot of nostalgia in the air today, and you know, Tony, I think, is a lot of fans listening who remember Robert. And interesting to hear Tony say he's never loved the team as much since those days. That's what they mean by tough shoes to fill or tough act to follow, the 70 right. Sabres. Yeah. All right. Thanks again, Tony. Getting connected with our fans brought to you by Bond, Schenick, and King, a full-service Buffalo law firm. Our number again, 803-0550. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog, WGR.
Around it comes to Rick Martin. Up ahead for Perreault. Perreault coming to center. Dumps it off the boards in the corner. Robert going after it. He scores! René Robert! And the Sabres win it again in overtime. Off the boards in the corner. Robert pounded it between the legs of Bernie Perreault. And the Buffalo Sabres are right back in the Stanley Cup Final.
The 75 Finals. René Robert's most famous goal, one of the great goals in Sabres history in the famous Fog game. Trying to figure out a way to mention that Joe probably wants to say something about the goaltender on that play, but just, Joe, I'm sorry. It's just not the day for it, Joe. Sorry, Joe.
I've made it before. I think I've made the point before. There are other days.
I mean, it's just such a like a indelible highlight where like you just don't see anything, right? You see Robert in the corner, and then Perreault just like, whoa.
Sort of shuffles his feet as yes. the puck goes through him, like, whoa, blows him off his skates almost.
Yes.
Is the
yes.
way he reacts. Yeah, right. Yeah.
We'll hear from Gilbert Perreault, who was on the Instigators today, in a moment. 803-0550 for us. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog here. We have Mike next. Hello, Mike.
Yes, gentlemen, how are you?
Good. Thank you for calling us, Mike. We appreciate it.
This actually is my first time ever calling into a radio show, so I'm so glad I'm on here. Unfortunately, it's with the sad passing of René, but I want to share some memories of my father and I. You know, I was 52, so I got to see a little bit of him here and there, mostly through highlights, but I remember Dad and I listened on the radio religiously every night. And painting that picture of those guys with paint was incredible. And this guy seemed to be the only person that I remember that was, like, in the right place at the right time, didn't make the mistake, and just made the key play to set everyone else up. He just never did anything wrong, it seemed. It was incredible. And to hear those guys, and my dad, I still remember this day, my dad and I reading the sports page the next day and reading the articles of what, and hearing his name mentioned. He just did, he pretty much assimilated everything that I think Buffalo, New York wanted to be at that time. So does. Just the good guy, overachieving, making the right play at the wrong time, and just carrying on. That's all I have to say. Gentlemen, I love your show, and let's go Buffalo.
Thank you, Mike. Hey, Mike, isn't it fun to remember listening to games when you couldn't see them?
Oh, my God. What's ironic enough is I grew up as huge because we lived in Brockport, New York. Huge Amherst fan, and I remember listening to Rick Peckham yeah. on the radio calling yeah. the Amherst games, and I ran across him because now he calls games for Tampa Bay Lightning. I live down here in Orlando, and I ran across him and told him, says, I remember you painting a picture of Chris Longman throwing a pass to Joey Robertson to Bob Mungrain and throwing a net like it was yesterday. It made my spine tingle, my hair like raise up. Like it's amazing yep. how good a radio personality can be in the world of sports that's pretty much lost, unfortunately, on what's going on today.
Yeah, well said. Thank you, Mike. Pleasure to talk to you. Peckham, I remember him a little bit, too. And then John Gertler had those games also in Rochester that I would listen to from here. I don't know how to describe Robert as a player quite, Bulldog. Like, having not seen him, I know about the prowess of the line. I yeah. would assume, anyone would assume, that he would have to be highly skilled to yeah. perform on that line like he did. But can you go into more detail?
I feel like we'll see if people agree with this assessment. But I feel like the best way I could describe him, if people feel like they know Gilbert Perreault and Rick Martin better, or if they don't know, you know, the three of them because they're of a certain age, I would say Robert had like the best of both of those guys. Like he was not the shifty puck handler that Gilbert was, but he was a great passer, had great vision in the zone. I think someone has already referenced him being the point man quarterback on the power play. And like even back then, that was a job they gave to someone who could A, distribute and see where, you know, where the weak point of the D was and how to exploit it with his teammates, and also had the shot. So he had the shot, wasn't quite Rico's shot, but he had a big shot, and his passing ability wasn't quite Gilbert's, but it was close. And I would say straight line speed, he was the fastest and best skater of the three. You know, he just flew. I mean, he just flew up and down that wing. And that's how I remember him. Like a lot of guys in that era, that even though he was a highly skilled, super, you know, dangerous player, he was tough. Like guys had to talk, like there's highlights out there you go find of him in fights. And it wasn't just like one or two, like they had to handle themselves. So he was a very well-rounded player. And, you know, the assist totals, like, speak a lot to that. I mean, the 100-point season, I think he might have had 40 goals, 60 assists. I mean, he put up big numbers just setting up, you know, Rick and Gilbert and, of course, other guys on the power play. So I would say he was a very well-rounded hockey player for such an offensively gifted player.
All right, well done. Yeah, I like that. I like it when the assists are like 1.5 times to 2 times the goals. That's my preference. That's my favorite player. Or even higher, you know. But you want the assists, 40 goals, 60 assists. That'll work. You know? 35 goals, yep. 52 assists. 21 goals, yep. 44 assists. Like that sort of ratio. Now you have guys once in a while where the goals are higher. That's no good. Come on. Let me see some more.
Don't be so selfish.
Right. Make a play. Yeah. Sneaky Joe has Gilbert from this morning on the Instigators. Here are some of Perro's thoughts.
I talked to Rene June 6th and, on Messenger, and that was the last time we had a talk. A few days after, probably a week after, somebody called me and told me that Rene had a major heart attack. So I was so surprised, you know. I mean, Rene was always kept in shape, you know, very much. And he took care of his what he was eating and everything. So he took care of himself. And I was so surprised that he had that. I mean, I couldn't believe it. And they told me he had a major one. And, well, yesterday they told me that he was gone. So it's very sad. Punchimlack had Rennie in Toronto. Rennie was with the Leafs when he was 18 years old. And they sent him to the minor and, in Rochester and Vancouver. And Joe LeCroux was coaching in Rochester. So Punchimlack knew Rennie very well. And he made an amazing trade there. I mean, 71, they traded Eddie Shack, who was 37 or 38, for Rennie, who was only 22. So that was a big trade. And Rennie got along very well with everybody on the team, and it was just a success right away. I was lucky to play with two great goal scorers. Rick and Rennie were scoring 50, 40 goals a year, and it was an easy game for the middle guy. We knew where we were on the ice. We were practicing all kind of plays, you know, crisscross, whatever, European style. And Rico had such a great shot, and Rennie too. I mean, they always scored a big goal at the right time. And we were playing on a power play, too, a lot. Rennie was at the point there, and we had Jim Lawrence with her, or Danny Gare, and we were doing an amazing thing on the ice. I mean, we were all over the place, and just sometimes not even looking, just make a pass, and he was there. That's the way we're playing. Yeah, I think Imlach and Joe Crozier decided to put Rico and Rennie and I together, and right away, we had, at the end of 71, we had a great end of the season. I mean, and from 72 to 79, it was very good. I mean, we had some great years together. After we retired, I mean, we kept in touch. Rennie was in Toronto at that time, and Rick was in Buffalo. And we were able to see each other a few times during every year. And we were participating to different events in Buffalo and Toronto or whatever, Montreal. We were together, and we were very good friends, you know. Every time I was, you know, he always asked me, he said, come on, Gibber, sing me a song all the time. Always bugged me with that. So I have to sing him a song all the time, you know. And I used to say to him, Rennie, if I sing one to you, you got to sing one in French to me. He had one in the head all the time, you know. And he was funny about that. He was a guy, a very easy guy to get along with. And we kept in touch after we were done, and we were great friends.
I always love hearing his voice, Perro.
Same here, yep.
Well, sad day for the Sabres community with the passing of Rene Robert. You'll have your memories on or off the ice of Robert, and you're welcome to share them with us at 803-0550. You can tweet at WGR550 as well, or Bulldog, or me. Wow, that picture, by the way. Robert's not in it.
But I know.
We're in
we are.
It.
That's...
Yeah, Rick Martin's wow. in it. Yeah. You went through it already.
Yeah, I mean the Rick. I don't know. Rick is laughing. I don't know. I'd love to know exactly what happened there. I doubt anyone. Like, if anyone should remember, it would be us. And I don't remember what exactly was said there. But it's. I was so grateful when you shared that picture with me.
I think LaFontaine almost looks like he's holding in a laugh. Is the way I see it.
Yeah, but I'm looking past him. I'm not looking at him for his. Is he looking behind me or at me? Like, I can't tell, but I don't appear to be waiting for his reaction to something. Anyway, that was a cool day. Remember Glenn Anderson? Like, Anderson was such a noticeable player, you know, like big, fast, and he scored a couple goals maybe in that game, and just sort of like the way he looked on his face, he was always so interesting to me, Glenn Anderson, for the Oilers and the Leafs. Yep. I remember him for that day, and... yeah, the French Connection. It was so cool to be able to do that. All right, we'll take a timeout. Paul Hamilton is coming up at 4 with his thoughts. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog here on WGR.
His career really ignited. There's no question about it when Grosjean put that line together. But remember, you know, he didn't fall to the wayside. He had to keep up with those guys. And he had to really make it happen, or he wouldn't have ended up on that line for so long. So, of course, he was a good player. And he was especially good at scoring in big moments, you know, when maybe other players might shrivel up a little bit. This is where he really stuck his chest out and showed a little hair in his chest and took care of a game and won it with so many important goals that he scored over his career.
Another great voice to hear from Mike Robitaille this morning on WGR. Check us out on the Audacy app, AUDACY, to hear from Roby and other favorite Sabres through the years who are reminiscing today about Rene Robert's career and life. Paul Hamilton will join us at 4. You can do so at 803-0550. We have Duke next. Hello.
I just driving around the car. I mean, I grew up in South Buffalo playing at Caz. I told all Chris I played with you at South Buffalo. I wore number 14. Honestly, like I said, since my night cross rings at Caz and this in the 70s, the fog game, I just, the guy, the thing about Rene was that, you know, he wasn't the highlight of that line, but he was always in the right spot at the right time and scored the right goal. And, I just, you know, I pay tribute. I wore his number in high school. I wore his number in college. And I don't know. It was like an idol of mine, mid-50s guy. And just the good old days of the odd and the way hockey used to be. And just calling to pay tribute to him, that's all.
Thank you. Nice to hear from you, Duke. Were you on the team that we played at the odd at the end of the year against Wheatfield?
Yeah, we had a couple of, yeah.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, it was good times, man. It's nice to hear your voice, bud. Nice to hear from you.
Yeah. Good luck to your son, Owen. All right. Take care.
Thanks. Chris.
Thank you.
Appreciate it, Duke. All right, man.
You're the odd. I mean, there's just so much to talk about. I like this point. Robert is famous in part for having been a part of that line. It's the line that's, you know, the line's retired at the arena and was at the odd. And that's like, the first thing about his career that you get to is the French Connection. And holy cow, like, who needs to say it? Just how different a time in this sport is that?
Yeah.
I mean, a line itself without – I mean, they probably played games or periods with different combinations sometimes, but really, like Gilbert said earlier, you're talking about 8 years with the same three guys. I mean, good luck. Good luck to any team aspiring to that. Of course. I mean, goodness. It just seems impossible to have anything like that.
You just very rarely get names for lines. You get them occasionally, but they don't become iconic because they just don't stay together for very long. Like how many Sidney Crosby's career has been a long, super successful career. How many wingers has he played with in his career? 40? I mean, it's got an assembly line of guys that have churned through there, and like all the stars in the game are pretty much like that. Maybe the most stable line that you can still see for the foreseeable future and has been together for a long time is Bergeron, Marchand, and Pastrnak, although Pastrnak is pretty compared to those two, I think newer, but still like that feels like that's a line you can put in permanent marker when you're looking at the Boston Bruins for the last, 4 or 5 years now, and maybe for a few more years moving forward, like I say. But I mean, it was very common back then. I mean, those lines, you just knew who you were going to see, and they had names, and I'm partial because we're in Buffalo, of course, and I grew up loving this team and rooting for the Sabres, but the French Connection just sounded like the coolest name, and they were just the best. I mean, they're just so flashy and just a real joy to watch, and you just don't the game is vastly different from a style standpoint, and then of course the turnover is so pronounced now that you just do not get that staying power enough to have a banner hanging in the arena with the name of the line because the guys played together for so damn long.
To bring you use the phrase a joy to watch, can I just have a minute to bring up something else?
Sure.
Would you, and we'll get to Paul and we'll talk about Rene Robert some more, would you consider what happened in the Nationals Phillies game a joy to watch? Isn't it a little bit cool or funny?
It's a curiosity. It's definitely interesting, but I think it's more embarrassing than anything else for the sport.
Yeah.
What are we doing?
Well, what do you want them to do? Right? Like, watching an umpire rub his fingers through Max Scherzer's hair maybe that's going too far, but that's sort of the general sentiment here is, all right, cut it out. But what do you want that? Do you want them just not? I don't know if you do, but in general, like, do we want pitchers to cheat? What do we want here? Don't we want officials to at least make an effort to legislate the rules, to enforce rules? So I know it looked ridiculous, and
yeah, I guess I do, but I mean, baseball, it's just like that has been a part of the sport forever. And I feel like one of the first baseball books I ever got as a late in my teens or early as an adult was something called "It's Not Cheating If You Don't Get Caught," and that has been baseball's mantra, I feel like, for my lifetime. It's just been, if I can get away with it, then it's not really cheating. But of course we know that it is, but what's the big deal? So I don't know, man. I could get really tangled up on it. I just think what we're seeing is embarrassing. So, of course, the pitchers bear some responsibility for us getting here in the first place because of the advantage they're trying to glean from using whatever might be in his hair or in his back pocket or who knows where. But, man, I feel like if I were a more fervent baseball fan than I am now, like if this were 20 years ago, I would feel like this is embarrassing. I don't know what the solution is, so I'm not sure I have a better answer, but it just is not – it's nowhere you want to be. It looks ridiculous.
It does. I do think this should be temporary. I don't think we're going to have pitchers taking their hat and glove off after every inning for the rest of time. I mean, I think it's measurable. The pitchers can get in trouble here because the spin rate can be measured, and you can see – stark enough differences where, like, you think you know what changed. And I think that if it's like this, I mean, Scherzer last night, for example, I think it'll work, actually. I guess in the end, I think it'll work. I think it will get pitchers off of this substance, and maybe eventually if umpires back off on enforcement, then it comes back and we do all that again, because as you say, there will always be that effort. But I don't think it's going to be like last night for too long. And I don't know. I also sort of understand Girardi. The Nationals GM just called him out. Said, I've known him for a long time. He's a con artist. He called him a con artist. Like I know what he was doing. But Girardi was saying, you never see Max Scherzer run his fingers through his hair. And like, maybe that's true. And then Scherzer's like, I was sweating. You know, I don't either know. Nobody seems to know exactly where it ends up. But I don't think it'll be comical like this for very long. I think pitchers will dial back. And they already are, actually. Now we're seeing what the umpires are willing to do to find out.
Yeah.
And I
would
think that changes.
On top of everything, by the way, I'm saying it was embarrassing. I think the most embarrassing thing of all was Girardi coming out of the dugout and challenging Max Scherzer to a fight.
No, it wasn't Scherzer.
Oh, it wasn't.
No,
okay.
I watched a video. It was one of their coaches, Kevin Long.
Okay.
Because you can hear the audio on Girardi, and he's calling him K Long, which was always his nickname for him, apparently.
Okay.
When he was on the Yankee bench with Girardi, they were on the same staff. So it isn't Scherzer that he's sort of goading.
Okay.
There.
Either way, you're the manager of a Major League Baseball team, and there's a disagreement. Now you're coming. Let's go. I mean, where are you? At Brick Bar? I mean, my God, get yourself under control.
Right. Good point. Paul Hamilton after sports here on WGR.
All right, football fans, the NFL draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. Audacy. Download it today.